You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And today, we're starting our 101st episode by talking about a video game. Both Uri and I very, very much enjoy the XCOM franchise. It's comprised of various games, but most of them, generally speaking, do the same thing. There's some sort of alien enemy invading Earth, and only us, our XCOM buddies, and our entire operation are able to stop them from conquering everything. And we do this by going on missions, which have a very tactical feeling. It's a very on-the-spot, move this soldier here and shoot at that. And with a strategic layer, where we look at the entire world and we decide where to build bases and how to use our budget, etc., etc. These two parts create a coherent whole that has been working very well for 25 years now in various incarnations of the XCOM game. And both Uri and I enjoy it so very much that we have not only in the past tried various ways to make it into role-playing games, but also constantly keep stealing things from XCOM into our role-playing games, because there is a lot going on there, game design-wise, that we can learn from.
I think that the ability to play a game or watch a movie or watch a play or read a book and understand what about it make you feel in a certain way is a crucial ability for us as game masters to understand how to get our players to feel the way we want them to feel during a gaming session. And I hope this would be one of many episodes titled Lessons from Various Works, Games, and Art, in which we analyze what is it about those franchises that works, and find elements that you can migrate into your games in order to evoke that same emotional response. But before that, a quick word about XCOM, beyond what Eran mentioned. XCOM is a bit confusing because it's a series of computer games that started way back in 1994 with XCOM Enemy Unknown and had many, many sequels and then rebooted in 2012 with XCOM Enemy Unknown. We're not going to get into the whole list of games. You can read up on Wikipedia. There's a link in the show notes. Let's focus about what's interesting about XCOM gameplay. Number one, and I think this is the main issue, XCOM knows what it is and what it's trying to do.
Yes.
One of the reviews on the rebooting of XCOM was that you can basically write down the whole plot of the game on a sticky note. Aliens coming to Earth, we fight them, hilarity ensues. That's it. XCOM knows what it is and what it's trying to do. And XCOM never tries to be more than that. In those games, it has a very clear definition of what it's trying to achieve, and it goes about it very directly. Number two, there's a clear separation to a strategic layer and a tactical layer. However, unlike most games, the strategic layer and the tactical layer affect each other all the time. Some strategic decisions would get you new equipment for your tactical missions. Other strategic decisions would make other missions easier or harder, and it's a tough choice every single time. Also, the success of tactical mission would affect your strategic thinking. A mission performed excellently would give you more bonuses to your strategic endeavors. Failed mission might have negative long-term effect on your strategy.
Also, there's a big part of the game which is capturing aliens alive, and that's always dangerous. It requires you to risk someone on the tactical level and maybe manipulate the situation so that you can bring an alien into like a corner of the map where you can then try to subdue them. And that's great because it gives you new tactical considerations and risks, lots of risks, for something that is only relevant later on the strategic level.
Very true. And in the earlier games, the stakes were very high. Your soldiers would die constantly and permanently. And that actually led to coin the term, that's XCOM, baby. If you have a 99% chance to hit an alien and you miss it, that's XCOM, baby. If you went on a mission and your entire team got wiped, that's XCOM, baby. Fans of the game expect it to be harsh, vindictive.
But fair.
You always know the stakes and you have to make hard choices. And that, I think it's one of the things that I really miss about many role-playing games. Where I feel that as a player, I don't know the odds. I have to make a choice and I don't have all the information I need in order to make a conscious decision to risk my character.
So all of this is fun and great, but let's start converting it into role-playing games. So first of all, you've just said something really important about knowing the odds and consequences. I think that maybe not enough GMs think about this as they present options to the players. I try to always remember, whenever I address a player, no matter what, to make sure that they are aware, even if vaguely, at what the consequences of their actions can be. Because making a choice without being aware of possible consequences is not actually making a choice at all. There's no decision there. If I can turn right or left, but I have no idea what's behind the door on the right and what's behind the door on the left, I did not actually make any important decision. It could have been just one door. It does not matter. But if beyond one door I can hear aliens and I know that the other one leads to a back alley, then now I have a decision. I'm not sure what the consequences are, but it's very likely that the door behind which there are aliens will lead directly to a combat encounter, while the other one will allow me to sneak around. And because it's the back alley, it'll probably take another round for me because I will need to go around the alley and to the front or whatever. In a video game, that's very clear because I can see the map. I can sort of, even if there's a fog of war that obscures stuff, I sort of know where things are and I probably know where the back alley leads to. In a role-playing game, none of these things are true, especially if you are playing in a theater of the mind without any map.
Yep.
So, by saying you can hear aliens behind the door to the right, and you know there's a back alley to the door to the left, I might not have actually provided a choice yet. I should probably go a step further. It really depends on my understanding with the players. If the players already know what I mean when I say leads to a back alley, because we've been playing for a long time, because they know from my intonation and from the fact that I even mention it that I'm hinting at a shadowy, stealthy approach, then great. But if they don't know, I should be clear about this. It leads to a back alley from which you will probably be able to flank if you are stealthy enough. I did not give them actual numbers. They don't know what a DC is. They don't know how long it will take. But they have some sort of an idea, at least, what it means to choose the back alley. The reason I'm saying all of this in an XCOM episode is XCOM is super duper clear on everything going on in the tactical level, but it's somewhat vague on the strategic level. For example, when you are going to examine a new alien that you've captured or dissecting a body of an alien that you've killed of a new type that you've never encountered before, you're never sure what will happen, what will come out of it. You are investing research and development resources into this project. You could have worked on upgrading your laser rifles, but instead you're working on this and you're not sure what is going to happen. However, you are sure that something interesting will come up of it, and you are at least generally aware of what this alien is able to do. Like, for example, maybe it's venomous or telepathic. And so you assume you will get something similar, like maybe a defense from venom, or maybe an ability to be telepathic, something like that. That's great. That's awesome.
One of the things that I really liked about XCOM was that in the earlier games, you really cared about your characters. Now, as I've mentioned before, this game has no plot. So how do they get you to really care about your characters beyond their tactical value? Simple. Number one, customization. You could have changed the appearance, name, layout, color scheme, dress. Anything about your character could have been customized. And we're talking about a game with plenty of characters. It's not uncommon to have 20 characters in your armory. You can also name your character, which automatically make you care about them a little bit more. They have background details. They have biography, which if you're into that sort of thing, you are welcome to read. And even more important, you can select a class for your characters. But as they progress, you have to make choices. In each new level, they get one of two or three different abilities. So after a few levels, your character have different abilities than other characters of the same class, which means they would be better at some missions, but not so much in others. If you have a character which is specialized against robotic enemies, and suddenly there are no robots in the next mission, then you have lost a large chunk of your ability. So it's very important to have a variety of abilities, and that require a variety of characters. And that requires that you pay attention to the characters in order to know who has which abilities and which combinations. Of course, if a character is injured during a mission, that character has to go on a sick leave, has to go to the infirmary. And that means some other character is going to have to pick up the slack where these abilities are missing. And I think downtime for characters to get them outside of the scope of the game really prime you to think long term. Okay, I'm not gonna make this excellent party of 4, 5, 6 amazing characters because I need backups. I need a variety of abilities. I need to think about this and plan for the future and not just for the current mission. And this is something that, again, I really miss in role-playing games. I usually play a bard because I don't want to think about those things. As a bard or as a sorcerer, I can usually cast whatever spells I want when I need them. But when you play a wizard, when you play someone who needs to prepare or gear up toward the mission, you really need to think ahead and plan ahead. And I think that's one of the things that get you invested in the game. The thinking, not about what I'm playing right now, but planning forward.
One of the most important things about your guys and girls in the tactical aspect of the game is that they find themselves, well, you push them into various strange situations. And out of those little encounters come brave stories of bravery in a brave situation. Like, for example, there was that time when that dude, who I will forever remember his name and looks, was in the corner, surrounded by three sectoids, and with one grenade managed to down two of them, but there was one last action and 36% chance of downing the last one, and he succeeded, and it was amazing, and he managed to shoot at the sectoid with his last bullet before having to reload, and that was such a brave moment of bravery. And there was also that one time when what's her name, which I will forever remember her name, was on the roof, and out of nowhere came this flying disc and shot 24 hit points at her, and she only has like 7, and she completely died, obliterated fully. And all of the other 3 members of the group managed to survive this situation later. But she died.
Bravely.
Bravely. So these are things that just happen. Emergent storytelling, one would say. Things that just happen during the game, during the tactical missions, through which specific people become important. Before that, he was just the dude with the shotgun. Now, he's the one that managed to down these 3 people. And I start to think about him as a hero. And I will take him next time because he was so great last time. I mean, I knew the chances. The chances are will probably be the same next time because it's all a numbers game. It's not actually him, but I care about him now. He downed 3 sectors. I will push him forward because I know he can do it. I know he's able to take it. When I push him into a room filled with sectoids, he will be able to survive it. Good for him. But moving forward, again, let's talk about a different aspect of the game that is really useful in role-playing games. In XCOM, because there are missions, there are common objectives for everyone in the mission. Everyone knows what they're there to do. It might be different every time. You might need to protect a VIP. You might need to take down some sort of UFO. You might need to investigate an underground bunker. It doesn't matter. The point is, everyone knows what we're here to do. Of course, that's because in XCOM, everyone is played by a single player. But in a role-playing game, that's very useful if you want to keep everyone on the same wavelength. I mean, there's nothing wrong about arguing for 10 minutes about where to go and what to do, and it can be a lot of fun depending on the game. But in a game that revolves around some big, important event, like, let's say, a UFO invasion to the world, in which you want to play the people who fight it directly, having a common objective and thinking in missions is really useful, I think. I use it a lot these days in my games when I try to think, how can I convince the players of course, because characters don't exist, only the players, that what they're currently doing, well, they should have a common objective that they're all thinking about and agree to, so we can end this mission and continue on to the next. That's because in my groups, generally speaking, we don't enjoy arguing about what to do.
I want to stop and focus for a minute on something that the new XCOM game, the one from April 2020, did, which literally changed the genre of the game. And he did that simply by changing the initiative mechanic. Let's focus on that for a moment. The usual initiative mechanic in XCOM games is one side, then the other. Meaning either your side or the alien side begins, and after you are done with your turn, the other side perform their turn, etc. One of the main advantages of this initiative order is that you don't know how many enemies you have and what they're currently doing. In the new XCOM, they've changed it to what they called interleaved initiative, which is like Dungeons & Dragons. Each specific character gets their own turn in the initiative order. And it works very well. However, there is an initiative tracker, which means at the start of every combat, you can see how many enemies you have and when they act in relation to your characters. And that takes away a lot of the tension and a lot of the horror. Because previously, you had no idea how many enemies you have and what they're currently doing and when. And that was scary. That was hell scary. Because you were never certain if you just need to get one more goddamn alien or there's like 10 of them around the corner. And now that you actually do know, it went from scary to tactical. Okay, how do I hit the aliens which are gonna shoot at me now? How do I plan ahead? And I think that is amazing, because simply by changing how we look at initiative, we completely remodeled how players think of combat, how players react emotionally to combat, and literally the genre of the game. And we have talked about this at length in our initiative episode, where we reviewed, I think, 12 different initiative mechanics and how they affect the game. There will be a link in the show notes.
They did several other things in the new game, in Chimera Squad. First of all, everything now works in chambers, encounters, so you can see everyone in the small space which you currently invade, and you only proceed to the next one after you finish everyone in the current place, which again is very much a small specific situation. Compared to the great unknowns in the previous games, where throughout the entire map, who knows how many and where they are, your enemies, I mean. And another important thing that the new initiative system does is making it so that every turn is a single character's turn. Where before, your turn, the player versus the computer, meant that you would choose which character to move and act at which point. So you could choose, for example, to bring your sniper up and then push your heavy forward, or push your heavy forward and then bring the sniper up, which you you shouldn't do. You should bring the sniper up first. And wait with the sniper's other action, by the way, until the heavy moves forward and reveals the enemies, and then return to the sniper and use their action to shoot at the enemies. That is completely irrelevant in the new system, which is turn by turn. It's now your character turn. It's now this character turn. So this character now acts, and they have to use all of their actions and have to then move to the next character according to the list. And you can only once per mission move someone up along the initiative track. And that's a big deal. And it should be, because in this new game, it really is a big deal. And I think there's a lot for us to learn from this, for initiative and in general, when we're talking about how to create, as Uri mentioned, a feeling of fear and the unknown. And I would remind you, you are still completely aware of your consequences. If you move forward, you know exactly how many squares the character can see. So how many squares will be revealed. You chose to move her forward. You chose to do this before moving your sniper up. So when she dies, because no one was in overwatch when the enemy suddenly arrived out of nowhere and shot at her, it was your fault. And that's fine. It was creepy and scary because it was your fault, because you knew the consequences and you still did it. I want to talk a lot about the strategic layer, because I find it personally fascinating, and I really enjoy role-playing games in which there is a strategic layer, or adding a strategic layer to a role-play in which it currently does not exist in. Most games don't have such a thing. Most games are about a group of people and what they do. Monster Heart does not have a strategic layer. It does not need a strategic layer. But some games are all about the strategic layer and must have it. And the best and recent example is Blades in the Dark. It's a game about a group of, generally speaking, criminals, generally speaking, doing heists and other such illicit jobs in order to increase their turf, their power as a group. And there are mechanics for it. And you have a sort of an organization sheet, which is like a character sheet for your organization. And there are rules for that. And when you do stuff during the, let's call it, tactical phase, although there are no tactics in this game, well, there's no map in the game, but your definition of tactics can definitely include what you're doing during a heist. What you're doing during the missions directly influence what happens in the strategic layer, in your organization, and vice versa, because it gives you lots of bonuses the more turf you have, the more sort of influence you have in the world. Also, your direct influence on other groups. You have relationships with various other groups. You know, other criminals, but also political groups, the police, important people. And this relationship, again, can come into the game in the tactical level, in the mission level. So it's great fun. It's excellent how well this game combines these two aspects. My next example, however, is sort of the other way around. It's an example of how you take a regular system, a system that does not have a strategic component, and you try to put a new one on, and it's only so-so. I'm talking about Pathfinder. Many Pathfinder adventure paths have their own unique strategic mini-game. In Kingmaker, you are building and running a kingdom. In Hell's Rebels, you run a rebellion. In Wrath of the Righteous, you have an army. In the new one for Pathfinder 2nd Edition, which unfortunately I don't remember the name of, you run a circus. And in all of these, the strategic layer affects the personal layer. I say personal because it affects your characters, not necessarily during each combat. It just affects their abilities. You might, for example, be able to gain new magic items, or you might gain more experience. You might find that the fact that your character has a role in the rebellion, like, for example, you know, the one in charge of security, or the one in charge of secrecy, you need to actually slot your character into one of these roles, and now this is the role that you feel is part of the rebellion. You might find that this new role affects your roleplay, how you see your character. But in the end, in the game itself, when you actually play, let's call it the tactical layer, or what we would actually usually call the role-playing game, it hardly ever matters. It's nice to have new magic items, but it doesn't really matter where they came from. In our game of Hell's Rebels, for example, we completely changed the system based on reviews by many, many players who played it and said, this doesn't really work. So our system, generally speaking, barely exists. It's more like once a week, as a group, decide on some action that your rebellion is doing. Here are some options, or you can create new ones. And the only thing beyond that that we are keeping track of are two numbers. How much our rebellion is succeeding, and how much the authority is failing. The authority of, the current government, the evil government. And once these two meet each other, once our rebellion is really successful and the authority is really low, then something will trigger in the campaign. Then we can go into the streets and affect change, actual change, and not just walk from the shadows. And that's the whole strategic layer, which is not a lot when you compare it to Blades in the Dark, where everything is so very well intricately connected and there are many interesting game decisions, game crunch decisions to do in each layer that affects the other. I want to give a few more examples. Rain is an interesting game because in Rain, you use the same system for yourself and for your organization. And it's a game in which organizations are integral to the roleplay. So I would recommend, generally speaking, checking it out. Also, I think it's a pretty interesting system. It uses the One Role engine, which I very much like, even if I'm not sure that I enjoy. There's also a really complicated system in Exalted Second Edition, The Mandate of Heaven. It's in the Game Master's Handbook or Accessory Book, or I don't remember the name. It's probably the most complicated system for running a government. It has a lot of moving parts, and many of them interact with the characters and their statistics. Like, for example, if you know how to lead, that will directly affect your ability to lead. If you know how to control bureaucracies, that will directly affect your ability to maintain cohesion. I would recommend checking it out if you want to see how far you can go with such systems, but never ever play it, probably. I should mention Ars Magica and Adventurer Conqueror King. Both systems have inbuilt mechanics for running. In Ars Magica, it's a household. In Adventure Conqueror King, once you conquer and become a king, it's about running your dominions. Both of them are, again, very integrated into the game. I personally find both of them a bit too heavy on the bookkeeping side and might not just be interesting enough unless the thing that you are interested in is running an organization, which I find most of my players don't enjoy. I personally do enjoy, but that's a different thing. And finally, for a very light approach, I would recommend checking out The One Ring or Adventures in Middle-Earth, which is the 5e variation, in which you have a fellowship phase between adventures. You adventure during half a year, and then the other half of the year, the winter, you spend in a haven somewhere and you do a fellowship phase in which you can take an action depending on your race and where you currently are and other things that you might have unlocked during your adventuring phase. And this will give you some sort of bonus or ability or something that will carry on to your adventuring phase. It's very, very simple, but it works very well, among other things, because it's exciting. When you reach a new haven, you are excited to find out what new fellowship phase abilities, actions, can I get here? And that's fun. It's a fun thing, surprisingly. I mean, it's such a simple thing, but it's very fun and very, very thematic. You can only do this and this, have an audience with Bjorn when you are in Bjorn's setting, obviously. That's it. I have been working for many, many years now on creating a tabletop version of an XCOM-like game. First of all, I modeled it on D&D 4 because the combat of D&D 4 was very much XCOM-y-like, and it's great fun, I think. And I have one or two lessons that I've learned while trying to devise the strategic layer. First, if you want it to be part of the roleplay, you must leave some room, some regal room. Like, for example, you can say, yeah, you are the master of security. You are in charge of security and you are in charge of operations. So you have the ability to choose from this and this action. But also, here's a more vague definition of what it means that you are in charge of security. Because when there's room for interpretation, there's room for role play. Like, for example, maybe every week, if we are working with weeks, if every week is like a round in which everyone gets to choose an action for the role, every week, maybe I roll a random event for one of you. Maybe someone approaches you and asks you about something suspicious that happens because you are in charge of security. And maybe it revolves and turns into some sort of a mini drama because he only asked you because he wants to push someone else out of the organization and he tries to sic you on that other person. Maybe it's a whole frame job. And there's a new story arising out of this that would not arise if you only had to choose from one of several actions. Another thing that is important and useful is maintenance. Forcing your players to spend resources, which could be actions, I mean, time is a huge resource, on just keeping up, just keeping afloat, just remaining where we currently are. It's something that in many, many role-playing games, it just does not exist. Pathfinder and D&D, for example, ignore maintenance almost completely because it comes in the way of being heroic. If there is a chance for your sword to break because you didn't keep track of how much oil you used on it, or even if you just didn't spend any time thinking about it, then that's not very heroic. But in an organization, and if you want to give the feeling of a real strategic choice, having to maybe let go of some part of it and allow, like, for example, your airplanes to maybe not get their maintenance this week, which means they'll roll with -1 or something, because you need the money somewhere, you need the budget someplace else, or maybe you don't have the manpower to man those security stations, so you will have to just forgo the chance. You know, if there's a UFO going through there, you won't be aware of that. But there's no other choice because you don't have enough manpower, you need to put those people somewhere else. You are now doing an actual real decision that comes with a loss, and you are aware of it and you chose it. And that's, I think, very managerial of you, because there's never enough of anything in a real organization. And you should probably feel the same on your strategic layer. Otherwise, everything is super duper heroic and you just succeed at everything and everything is just great, which can be fun. But I'm not sure you need an organization for that. I don't see the point of having a strategic layer if you're playing a heroic game. Uri, I hope you see what I mean by this.
I think it ties down very well to the concept that heroic moments cannot exist if there's nothing leading up to them. You need the maintenance, you need the day-to-day, you need the plan ahead in order to achieve that moment where it culminates together in something that you know is the result of the choices you have made.
Excellent. I think we should summarize. Is there anything else we should say about XCOM?
Yeah, but in a more broad sense, I think we should tell every GM or player listening, don't be afraid to fish ideas from games or art or books, both in terms of crunch and fluff. You can simply go with, oh, alien invasion, that's an interesting new topic, let's go with that. Or you can literally say, oh, initiative, first our side, then their side. Interesting, let's try that. Don't be afraid to experiment if your gaming group has an open mind.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the war.
Quickly now, both of us have interesting news about our adventures. First of all of my three D&D 5 adventures are now available through the DM's Guild. I, for the past 4 months or so, transferred, transformed, and translated three of my ancient adventures, which I really, really like, all three of them, into D&D 5 and English. They are currently available as a bundle, all three for the price of two. And very, very shortly, the first one is called One Last Tribute. It's the most excellent dungeon that I could have come up with that is straightforward and simple and a tomb and sort of sweet, I hope, and in the middle of a swamp and for level 2 or 3 sort of like starting adventures. The second is Shed Not a Tear, O Princess, which is a one-shot meant for conventions, comes with its own group of pre-generated characters, and it's weird and mysterious and some sort of heavy and unusual, I hope, and I don't want to get into any details about it. And finally, there's Reliquary Race, which is the newest one, which was designed as a D&D 4 adventure, checking to see just how far we can push, well, literally push, in this case, a big box that is annoying, an annoying big box. It's like 4 hours in one single combat. You roll initiative at the beginning, and that's it. There's no rest, and there's no amount of time that you spend out of combat. Everything is turn after turn after turn. You push an annoying relic that occasionally tries to kill you through several rooms, and try to make it out and survive. And I think it's great fun. I hope it's great fun. All of them are now available. That's it. That's me.
I enjoyed it. I love adventures in which you try to do regular mundane things, but because it's a fantasy world, everything is so goddamn complicated. That's why I enjoyed your game, man. It's you just need the goddamn box to move to the other room. What's so difficult? And the answer, of course, is everything. Everything is difficult.
I'll give a link in the show notes. Of course, you can just go to the DMs Guild and search for, I think, Eran Aviram will probably work, or any of the names of the adventures that I've just mentioned. But
I got some good feedback on my adventure Rolling with Laughter, but no reviews on DriveThruRPG, which is a shame. So if you have enjoyed my game, please go and review it as well. Sending me emails is amazing, but reviewing actually helps other people to see and play the game. And I have spent the last week working on converting Romeo and Juliet into a 5th edition adventure. It goes very well. First draft is done, and it's taking me forever to create the pre-generated characters, because there's so many small things that I just want to get right. And I think I'll be ready to start playtesting next week. So if you're listening to this episode and you have a gaming group and you want to playtest Romeo and Juliet in D&D 5th edition, send me an email.
I remind you, if you want to send us an email about any topic and you wanted to maybe address it in our show, send it to show@dwarfcast.net. This is us. That was us. And as always, we'll end with
Dwarfs is shared under Creative Commons by attribution, non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.